The Jews had only 35,000 fighting men, no air force, and only 6 tanks. The Egyptian army alone had 40,000 soldiers, 135 tanks, heavy guns, and an air force of over 60 planes, including Spitfires and bombers. The Jordanians had the Arab Legion, which trained by the British and led by Englishman Sir John Bagot Globe, along with 48 British officers. Yet against all odds, the Jewish fighters won. Many of the pitched battles became epic and smacked of the miraculous. For example, the Egyptian army launched an attack along the Mediterranean coast against the kibbutz Yad Mordechai as part of an offensive to take Tel Aviv. 2 infantry battles, 1 armored battalion, and 1 artillery battalion expected to take the kibbutz of 130 residents in 3 hours. The battle raged for days. The Jewish defenders held off the entire Egyptian army much longer than anyone expected, using homemade weapons that many times did nothing more than make noise. They even used mock soldiers made out of wood, which they moved from trench to trench in order to give the appearance of greater numbers. I heard of a story where they rigged the cars to make crazy loud noises just to scare the Egyptians and the Jordanians. Although the Egyptians eventually broke through, they were now behind schedule and their morale was badly shaken. The Jordanians, meanwhile, had a very strong grip on the old city of Jerusalem. 3 times the Israelis tried to attack at a point called Latrun, but were unsuccessful. The road between Jerusalem and Tel Aviv remained cut. Jerusalem would have succumbed to siege if not for the discovery of an ancient Roman road that turned south of the city and then turned west until it turned north. A great deal of this road was constructed by religious Jews from Mea Shearim in the dead of the night. Right? I think it was Shabbat, it was Friday night, to avoid Arab snipers. The final road was bumpy and laden with holes, but it was a road. It enabled trucks to come into Jerusalem and effectively break the siege. The result was a stalemate around Jerusalem. In the north, the Arabs were encamped at the top of Har Kanan, which overlooked Tzfat. If you've been to the Migdal, they tell this story. It was a virtually impregnable position. The Jews could not gain control of the road to Tzfat or the city itself as long as they were there. Then the Israelis, they brought up the Davidka, a tremendously noisy mortar that was extremely inaccurate and of little tactical value. One Friday afternoon, the Israelis fired a Davidka several times, and then a miracle happened. It rained. It never rained in May and June there. The Arabs were now sure that the Jews had the atomic bomb. What else could make it rain? Consequently, they fled their impregnable positions on top of Har Kanan. The Israelis captured Tzfat and drove the Arabs out of the entire northern area of the Galilee. These are only a few examples. For the believing Jew, these are nothing short of miracles, direct signs of the divine hand in Jewish history. With the War of Independence still raging, the War of Israel's survival was just beginning. And unfortunately, it continues to this day. Nevertheless, the pendulum of history has arguably never swung more widely than from the end of the Holocaust in 1945 to the birth of the Jewish state in 1948. To many people, God's promise to return the Jews to their homeland was emerging before their eyes in miraculous fashion. Pretty good, no? You guys enjoying the miracle stories? Okay, we're going to keep doing it. We're going to do a few more stories, and then we're going to jump back into the Gemara. Okay, and hello. A few more stories, because I love stories, let's be honest. On April 4th, 1948, the odds were not in Israel's favor. Outnumbered 10-3 and with artillery shells raining down on them, a few hundred Jewish residents and soldiers managed to hold off about 1,000 troops of the Arab Liberation Army. The Arabs had attacked the kibbutz Mishmar Emek, with the intent of taking it for strategic location in between Jenin and Haifa. All hope seemed lost, yet surrender was not acceptable. Miraculously, the highly outnumbered Jewish forces managed to go on the offensive, successfully taking over the Arab villages surrounding the kibbutz. This attack led the Arab Liberation Army's retreat and was the last significant stand of the Arab Liberation Front in the Israeli War of Independence. The Battle of Katamon. This one hits close to home because we're so close. I live very close to it and I used to work here. During the Independence War, Israeli forces re-entered Katamon, which was a key strategic position in Jerusalem that Israel had failed to retake from the Arab forces controlling it just 2 days earlier. This time, the Israeli troops quickly captured the monastery that was being used as the Arab forces' base of operations. That was the end of the fighting, or so they thought. After a few quiet hours, a fierce counterattack began. Although they managed to hold off the Arabs, the Palmach began to run low on supplies. Additionally, they suffered countless injuries, including platoon commander Raful Etan, who was shot in the head. They needed to retreat, but no soldier could be left behind for torture and mutilation. It was decided that those wounded who could not make it out would be put in a room rigged with explosives. Two soldiers would stay behind and detonate the explosives when the Iraqi forces reached the monastery. In the meantime, the enemy forces had also suffered many casualties and were out of ammo. Their surrender was near, but the Israeli forces in the monastery had no way of knowing this. The Israeli soldiers were on their way out of the door when suddenly the words, "Don't retreat," echoed from a radio that was thought to be broken. The Arabs retreated. The Israelis stayed and reinforcements arrived to treat the wounded. Raful, the platoon commander, survived what should have been a fatal bullet wound on the head and was back in action half an hour later. This, along with the battle being won, was nothing short of miraculous. Taking back Mount Zion, another one close to home. During the Independence War, Ira Rappaport's Israeli platoon fought the Jordanian military for Mount Zion and found themselves surrounded by hundreds with only 25 bullets left. Sorry, just letting someone into the meeting. Then, just when the small with a sad end seemingly near, the men agreed to go out with a bang and ready themselves to make good use of every last bullet. Then, just when the small platoon was about to face the inevitable, something incredible happened. The Jordanian soldiers dropped their weapons and began suddenly running away, screaming, "Abraham!" Several years later, Ira would come across a familiar faith with an unlikely answer as to what had actually occurred on that miraculous day. This is a former Jordanian soldier who had fought against Ira on Mount Zion. According to him, his army all witnessed a vision of Abraham defending the Jews in the sky above the Israeli platoon and had no choice but to drop their weapons. Kaval. Next time you're on Mount Zion, remember that story. Okay, another great story. During the War of Independence, 24 homemade Israeli... Okay, Zoom's telling me that I only have 10 minutes left. All right. So we're gonna get back to the miracle stories. I'll send them to you guys if you want to just go online. There's an endless amount. What we've seen now is basically that the lives of every single Jew was at stake in 1948. We have to just study a little bit of history, study the Holocaust for God's sake, and you understand that we would have had another Holocaust in our hands if nature would have run its course. But nature did not run its course. God did a miracle. And as we've seen in now at least 10 stories, and there's tens and tens more, maybe hundreds more, God miraculously saved the Jewish people against all odds in 1948, and then again, even more miraculously, in 1967, and in a miracle much greater than in the Maccabees, the small against the mighty won the war. Okay, that's amazing and beautiful, but what does that mean on a halachic level? So now I'm skipping back to the Shut Maharam Kol Mevaser. The Kol Mevaser, Rav Mezhulel Shemonata, was one of the Gdolei HaPoskim. Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kook considered him the greatest posek of the generation after Rav Avram Tzvi Yehuda Kook. And he wrote, "Behold, there is no doubt that this day, the 5th of Iyar, which is established by the government and most of the Knesset representing most of the people, and most of the Gdolei Rabbanim, most of the giants of the generation, should be celebrated as a remembrance for our salvation and our freedom. And there is a mitzvah to make it a simcha and a yontif and to say hallel." Okay? So what Rav Rata is saying is that we have a halachic obligation in our generation to sing hallel, to celebrate the miracles that occurred to us. Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kohen writes, "I used to go out and wander the streets of Jerusalem for 1, 2, 3 hours with the joyous nation, with the multitudes of young men and women. I saw this as a mitzvah and an obligation. Let Israel rejoice in its maker. Let the children of Israel rejoice in their king. To my sadness, each time I was filled with regret by something which borders on a chilul Hashem, a desecration of God's name. The elders, the Gdolei HaTorah, they didn't appear. Where were they on the streets of Jerusalem? Each year, how I longed and yearned to see them." What Rav Kook was saying is that it's a chilul Hashem, in his opinion, similar to Chizkiyahu not singing Hallel, to not thank Hashem for the miracles that happened in his generation. It's almost like not looking with a blind eye to the miracles that God's doing. It's almost like saying that Hashem isn't present in the world. And that was why Rav Soloveitchik, the Rosh Yeshiva of YU, went against his family tradition and decided that he should become a Zionist, part of the Mizrahi movement, someone who did say Hallel, although without a bracha. for halachic technical reasons. And he believes, and he writes in his book called Odido Fek, that the state of Israel is clearly a gift from Hashem, and anyone who doesn't see it as a gift from Hashem and as a miracle is just blind to reality and blind to the fundamental principle that God is always with us and God is guiding our history. And to look at it differently is simply to not look with straight eyes. And that's why my Rav, Rav Melamed, says this is halacha in our generation. We must say halal with the bracha to show our gratitude, to show our thankfulness to Hashem. Because if we don't make a public statement of thankfulness to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, it's being kafui tov, which is to deny the good, and we're denying the blessing that we need so desperately in our generation. And we need to publicly say that God's hand was in this. And that's not just a celebration, but it's a responsibility, because if God gave us this state, then that comes with the obligation to contribute to this land of Israel and to build the state of Israel and to ask myself, how can I personally give to this Israel and bring the Mashiach one step closer? In addition, as the Pnimi Halacha writes, there are other things we are celebrating on Yom HaAtzmaut. We are celebrating the fact that God's promise of Kibbutz Galiot to bring the Jewish people back is finally being fulfilled before our eyes. Before our eyes, we are a part of that revolution by living in the land of Israel. And God's promise in all the Navis, in Yirmiyahu, that God would one day bring us back to Israel is happening in front of our eyes, and we celebrate that at Yom HaAtzmaut. And that is not a small thing. And we celebrate all of the miracles that comes with having a state, like the fight against assimilation that we're able to have because we have a state, and all of the practical benefits that simply were not possible, you know, as Rav Melamed points out simply enough. Yes, tonight's Yom HaZikaron, and we're going to be sad and mourn and cry for the 30,000 plus soldiers who gave their lives, and everyone is a tragedy, but it's been 60 years, and because we have an army to defend ourselves and we have a state, on a 30,000 compared to 6 million, there's no comparison. Okay? So on a very practical level, we have so much to be thankful for, and we need to make that public statement of gratefulness, as our rabbis have told us to do, and as is supported by our Talmudic and halachic sources. I'm going to end off with just two allusions to Yom HaAtzmaut, and then if we have some more time, if you have any questions, and we have more time for some more analysis and response, we will. Now, the first is the Sfas Emes. The Sfas Emes is a great Hasidic Rebbe, and he lived about 150 years ago. And Sfas Emes writes something really interesting. He writes that every biblical holiday has a rabbinical secondary level of the holiday. So for example, he writes, there is the holiday of Shavuos, when we receive the Torah. That's from the Torah. What's rabbinical parallel of that, which takes the energy from it, like the moon reflecting from the sun? Of course, that is Purim. Purim, when we re-accept it upon ourselves, the rabbinical Torah. Okay? Similarly, there was Sukkot. Okay? On a biblical level. What's the rabbinical level of Sukkot? Chanukah. In many ways, Chanukah parallels Sukkot. They both have the same amount of days, and you know the laws of Chanukah are actually based off of the laws of Sukkot. And there are many ideas on a philosophical level, there are many connections between them. But he says, what about Pesach? We don't yet have a rabbinical precedent for Pesach. He says, "Mechag Pesach, mekavim anu liot od." We hope one day, like the days we left Egypt, we should see wonders. Now, looking forward 140 years, 950 years later, did anyone see a holiday which in many ways parallels Pesach? Yom HaAtzmaut, of course. Pesach is when we got independence, became a nation. And Yom HaAtzmaut is when we, the Jewish people, became a nation. Okay? So it seems like that prophecy of Sfat Emet seems to have come to fruition in our time period, amazingly enough. One more hidden allusion to Yom HaAtzmaut in the Torah, this one even cooler. So the Vilna Gaon had a tradition, and this is way hundreds of years ago, that everything that's written in the Torah the pasuk of the Torah exactly parallels what happened in that year in history. So what's the 5,708th pasuk in the Torah? We'll end with this. V'shav Hashem Elokecha Eshvutcha. God will return the Jewish people to its land. V'yichamcha and have mercy upon you. V'shav v'kibatcha mikol amim. And bring you back to all the nations, which he had spread you out from. Amazing. Exactly the pasuk talks about the Jewish people coming back to the land of Egypt, of Israel. Okay, if you guys have any questions, please email me. Please send me questions. Show that you were listening. I hope you enjoyed. Let's celebrate. Just like in Shabbat, we need to take upon ourselves the holiness of Shabbos. Tomorrow night, and go out, sing, feel joy, and express in your own words to HaKadosh Baruch Hu your gratitude for the land of Israel, for the state of Israel, for the miracles of 1948, and the miracles on a daily level that we experience here in the land of Israel, despite the fact that there are many challenges and it's not perfect. But despite the fact that it's still, this is a day to say, Zehayom Asadonai Nagil Nisbchabo, this is a day to celebrate and say, thank Hashem. Okay. I think Zoom's gonna zoom us out, but you can try to squeeze in a question. Does anyone have any questions before we, before Zoom unzooms us? Not, like I said, you're always welcome to email me. Help me find the chat.
What chat? I think you have to leave this sharing the screen, you know.
Okay.
Your. Yeah.
How do I see the.
Isn't that thing on the back here? The back there. It's over. Okay. Stop. It's closed.
It's closed. It ended. Sure. And 40 minutes have ended.
Okay.
It's just recording.
You can save all that.
It saves all that.